Hello and welcome to the Hockey Hurts podcast for July 2nd of 2023. I'm Ryan Wilson, Penguins writer for HockeyBuzz.com.
I'm Cameron Walsh from Hockey Hurts. Yeah, there.
Hey, it's been 11 and a half months. Lots have happened in Penguins land. Ron Hextall, not the GM since the last time we talked. Thankfully, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang are still Penguins, but that was pretty dicey about a year ago. So we've got Kyle Dubas, who I perceive to be the best option possible for the Penguin situation, and they went out and got him. So that was, I thought that was a pretty big win. And we got a lot of roster moves to talk about. Penguins missed the playoffs for the first time since, gosh, 05, 06. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think so. No, it might be 7-8 was when they got beaten by Ottawa. And then, I can't remember. It's a long time, people. It's a long time.
08, they lost in the finals to Detroit, year before Ottawa. So, yeah, well, regardless, it's I didn't think they should have missed the playoffs, and there are certainly a multitude of reasons why they did. I do think some of the reasons why they did are still here after the draft and after the first day and a half of free agency. I'm not predicting them to miss the playoffs, but there are areas of concern that I have because... as most people know, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin played all 82 games last year at, 35 and 36 years old and played great. And that was great to see. Like, that was super awesome. We love those players. To see them be able to continue to play at that level as Penguins, that was just wonderful to see. However, we kind of are stuck in that 2013-14 time period where the Penguins' depth scoring's pretty stinky. And I felt like they had two fourth lines last year. And yeah, after day one of free agency, it looks like we got two fourth lines again this year. I thought the third line was a big area of concern. When you think back at all the Penguins' best seasons, there's been a really good third line to back up what Crosby and Malkin do. I find it more important as they're aging gracefully, but they are aging. And it's going to be really tough to keep that up. And my expectations are not for both of those players to play in 82 games, and maybe not at that level. Like, you shouldn't expect that. And I feel like the roster construction is expecting that.
Yeah, I think the cheat code is starting to wear a little thin. You know, it's the problem they've got. They've got three players that are cheat codes. And I would, yeah, that's the injury factor as you get older becomes a larger concern, particularly for Malkin. And I was going to say Letang, but, you know, his were mainly ridiculous heart issues. So, I just, yeah. It's a start. He's got 7 years, and that's probably one of the things that worries me a little bit about it, because he'll look long-term more so than straight away. But he does have options. I don't know how you can move some things out to provide those options, but it's going to have to. They're over the cap.
Well, I think he did have options, and so while I'm not like anti Kyle Dubas, like right after the hire that I was pretty bullish on, but I do think I don't agree with the path taken in the last week or so. I guess we could start right at the draft. Braden Jaeger probably a fine prospect, definitely a first-round, mid-first-round talent from all accounts out there for the people that pay attention and do the work on that front. I guess I just don't care. He's not going to help Crosby or Malkin ever, right?
So no. Yep, correct.
I just philosophically disagree with making the selection, and that should have been traded for some roster help, especially since the Penguins had cap space to weaponize. That cap space was spent pretty quick, and I would argue it was spent on fringe, non-needle-moving players. And you know, my perception of Dubas coming in was he really cheaped out on the fringes and would pay difference makers. And it's not that he broke the bank on some of these players. So where's I had my list. I lost it. Matt Nieto, Noel Achari, Ryan Graves. Well, Ryan Graves is a legitimate top four defenseman. He doesn't belong in that grouping. But just the depth stuff, $2 million here, $2 million there. It adds up, and then it goes bye-bye. And, you know, I'm fine running Drew O'Connor and like Alex Nylander out on the fourth line making nothing.
Yeah, agree.
The fourth line just needs to not suck. And the third line should have had a heavy investment made. And right now you're looking at Michael Granlund is still on this team. And they had a free out, but the buyout wasn't that painful. Honestly, especially when you think about the cap going up in the years to come, they were going to get about $4 million in relief this year. And when you watch Jason Zucker go to Arizona on a one-year deal, are we going to pretend that he wouldn't have taken the identical deal to stay in Pittsburgh? Because I don't believe for a second he wants to play for the Coyotes. He wants to maximize his future earnings, which obviously the Coyotes are going to trade him to a contender. I mean, that's a foregone conclusion, but players don't like moving their stuff, and Zucker really liked being in Pittsburgh. If you give him that $5 million, he stays. And wasn't the big part of the problem with Zucker contract the term? Well, guess what? He didn't take it because he's betting on the cap going up. He should still be a Penguin. Granlund should not be. Now, Dubas talked about buyouts being a last resort. Well, where are these other resorts before there? Because that man is still on the roster, and that is a terrible cap hit. Now, Jeff Carter, there's nothing he can do there, and maybe he does find a miracle there, but I do not hold Jeff Carter against the current front office regime because that, you know, that's an inherited.
No, correct.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Granlund is inherited, of course, as is everything, but there was an out there, and it was pretty. Penguins Twitter usually doesn't agree wholeheartedly on a lot of stuff, but I thought the vibe on there was, yeah, a buyout, sure, fine. Yeah, it sucked to lose a second round pick, but get this guy out of here and let's increase our cap space and do some really cool stuff. I thought the moves lacked imagination, and I thought it was pretty mid and pretty boring. And even from a let's start here. I'm not cup or bust anymore. Like, that's not a realistic thing. I would like to see them make a run in the playoffs as we close this era out, and I thought there was a path to surround them with talent to do so. But this is just kind of like, even from an entertainment standpoint, I don't want to watch like grinders. Like, give me something cool. Something like interesting to watch. Because last year, if Crosby and Malkin weren't on the ice, it was dreadful. Honestly, dreadful.
It was tough to watch.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not as... Having heard you say that, everything you've just said, I kind of get why in our little chit-chats you were like, ugh, like you are. Whereas I wasn't quite as ugh on it. I like the Graves signing. You know, it's a Dumoulin replacement. Mm-hmm. I get there and I look at Acharian and Nieto and I'm like, yeah, okay, they fill some holes that the team needs to fix. I actually think it improves the third line from what it was.
I know, I forgot the one. Lars Eller, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah, yeah.
I blocked that out of my mind. I'm like, that one, most of all, I'm just like, how did we hire Dubas and have that happen?
Well, this is the thing. I sit there and I think to myself, the entire front office was, and this is a question, was it completely gutted and he had to bring every one of his own, or does it still have holdovers? I know the drafting staff was still holdovers, right? So,
well, he's got Spezza for sure.
Yeah, that's fine, but Spezza's not going to.
No, I'm just saying, like, yeah. I thought one of Dubas's strengths was building out the front office with some really smart people.
Yes.
That's going to take time, unfortunately. And I Correct. Think with that missing, that could have led to some missteps here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't care. I don't know why you have to build out your front office to know that 34-year-old Lars Eller ain't it for your third line center when you need depth scoring.
Yes. Yeah, no. I absolutely agree with that. But to me, you get there and look at it, and they all look in an old school style of hockey sense, safe gets, if that makes sense. Like you get there and go, Lars Eller's not going to burn you on the defensive end of the defensive side of the puck, right? I do feel like it's one of those signings, the Lars Eller one in particular, where it's like you sort of get there and hear the name and think, oh yeah, Lars Eller, that's not a bad signing. Then you go, oh crap, he's been around for forever. He's 34 and he's not the Lars Eller I remember who used to play for the Washington Capitals, right? Like it's not the same guy. And like I went, oh, that's not bad. And then had a bit of a think about it and it's like, no, Cameron.
And I think it's
not,
2 years.
This is not like... a good... It is. So it takes him through to 36. Now, you know, they could trade him away or whatever, and all those kinds of things. But when you look down cap friendly, there are a lot of players on this roster that have NTCs and part NTCs and all that kind of stuff, right? So not only are they old, but the old guys are hard to move. And this who's the youngest player on the, like currently on the roster?
Drew
Nylander? Well, they're both 25. P.O. Joseph's 24, right? So yeah. It's not like...
Well, that's the life of a longtime contender, you know?
Correct. No, this is the thing. Not saying that they shouldn't be old, but it's not like... Well, you can say that. I say it's a factor of a general manager 5 or 6 years ago trading his way out of bad decisions and leaving them no chance to replenish the cupboard with draft picks when they could. Anyway,
I think the Penguins are in a really unique spot that most franchises don't find themselves in. They've won 3 cups in this era. It's going to look bad when it goes bad. I think most people like accept that. Prospects, right? Like, who cares right now? Like, make the next 2 or 3 years the best that it can be for the legends that have been on your team for almost 20 years. And put your chips in the middle. And that, to me, is kind of why I'm meh or blah on it, is these aren't push your chips in the middle moves. These are just kind of, like, go after it. Like... Sure, it might blow up, but like a Max Pacioretty, for example, like that's a bet that I would make, you know.
Well, if you think about it, you go and get rid of Granlund, and somehow find somebody to take Jeff Carter, which was never going
to
happen.
I don't see a path to that one, because the problem there is that he has some form of trade protection. It might be full.
Yeah.
Is it full? Yeah. Do you have that open?
Oh, it says no movement clause. So
that is full.
That's what I thought.
I mean, maybe he likes California. Maybe, you know, we can transition to the most exciting part for me. on free agent day was the rumors of a player I wrote an article about and a player that just happened to win Defensive Player of the Year or Defenseman of the Year. He's not the Defensive Player of the Year. In fact, I think his percentile in defense is zero, but his offense is 100, and he's the best at it, and that would be Erik Karlsson. I wrote how it wasn't too crazy to concoct a scenario where they acquire him. And, of course, much like the day went, Twitter broke, so you couldn't even follow the exciting stuff about that.
Yeah,
so,
that's...
you know, that apparently, reportedly, the Penguins very much talking to Karlsson. Sidney Crosby talked to Karlsson. So, like, the wheels are legitimately in motion, and there's an interest there. But as you said, then they sign Ryan Graves, and it's like, okay, they're over the cap right now. How is this going to work? They do have reportedly a third team involved. I got to assume it's like got to be the Coyotes, right?
Well, that's everyone's dumping ground, right?
That desert's got so much trash in it. So... regardless if it's the Coyotes or whatever, third team involved. I'm almost at the point where they have to make that trade in order to find some offense for this depth scoring. And we always kind of view it as, oh, third line, but 100-point defenseman is a nice, different way to go about it. And, wouldn't you know it, fun to watch.
Yeah. If you roll with everything you've just said, they, even if they don't go deep or anything like that, you're at least going to enjoy watching them for the 82.
Furthermore, Chris Letang has been overused for a long time, and just because he can handle it doesn't mean he should handle it.
I was just thinking that, actually, yeah.
And you add Erik Karlsson, and no longer... does Chris Letang have to, like, do literally everything? Not that he's still not going to, like, do his thing. He will. And he'll probably, if it were me, I would give him the harder matchups. So that wouldn't change for him. But at the very least, he wouldn't be expected to, like, be the only offensive defenseman on the team worth a damn. And Erik Karlsson on a power play with Malkin and Crosby and Gensel sounds pretty neat. Not that I think Letang did a bad job, but let's be honest. Erik Karlsson is a generational. He's might be on the Mount Rushmore of defensemen of all time.
Yeah,
he's getting in that conversation.
Yeah, with that question about the power play, seeing as we've gone to sort of positional specifics, would you run the two of them on the back end?
I'd contemplate it.
Yeah,
that's what I haven't really gotten that far down the road with it, but
No. Oh, yeah, I get it.
It would be two righties, but I'm gonna be honest. I would probably start Raquel there and give Letang some minutes off.
That does logically make sense. You're not gonna give Riley Smith a crack?
No, he's not gonna crack that lefty log jam.
I wouldn't think so.
Put a pin in him though. I've been kind of not happy with some of the moves, but I thought Riley Smith was a very good move. The Karlsson thing, we'll see. I haven't heard much today about it. I've reached out. But there's nothing back yet. So, you know, when Kyle Dubas said buyouts were a last resort, the implication to me was you're going to do something clever and interesting to get out of that. So where will we see that cleverness that I was expecting, you know?
The point you made about Granlund, that feels like the cleverness. The only way the Karlsson thing works is using him as the cleverness.
And Petrie.
I don't think Petrie can be a part of that.
He's got to be a part of that trade because they ain't paying a third pairing guy $6 million to push Jan Ruda in the press box, making close to three.
The thing is, though, he's got too many conditions on where he can go, and unless that's what the problem they've got is, they're trying to find that third team within the realm of what Petrie's willing to go to. It's the only thing I can think of.
I do think sometimes with this stuff, though, like when you're not wanted anymore, and that message is like clearly sent. You know, Patrick Hornquist did not have Florida on his accepted list.
That's true.
When that deal went down. So, you never know with that stuff, but I did see a Mike Colligan sighting on Twitter on Saturday. And really? He had said, yeah, Petrie would be part of that. So I'm going to roll with that because Mike is always right.
The only other thing,
like, if he's peeking his head up and making a comment like that, then I'm going to go with that. And if it isn't right, I don't care. I'm putting my marbles in that area.
That would be the preference. I just struggle to see how it happens.
But 2024 first round pick, of course, would be, I expect, to be used in a deal like this.
I would think so.
Or Owen Pickering, maybe? Now that they have Ryan Graves, Owen Pickering is kind of blocked. Anyways?
For now, yeah. That's a good point.
Assuming they keep Pettersson. They always seem to want to... People always seem to want to move him, but I got to tell you, I was slow to come around on him, but he has been really good value at $4 million.
Well, that's the thing that, like, you said earlier on about Graves, in the grass, that he is a legit top four defenseman. If you flip, this sounds very unfair. If you manage to flip Petrie, which for Carlson, which you sit there and say that out loud, you go, that just sounds dumb.
Well, there's a lot more there.
But... I know. That's what I meant by this sounds unfair, because you say it that simply, right? You go, you're leaving a few factors out here, Cam. But if you flip him out, you go, well, you've got kind of that prototypical aggressive defenseman with somebody that can cover that person's ass when you go to utilize their best parts of their skill sets, right? You go, that's very traditional. That's sort of how it works. I do sit there and think about it because it's like the season ended so early and Vegas won it so early. I've been watching a lot of old games, and I do think back to I've been watching the old 08 finals run, and they had Scuderi and Gill together. Right, I have a feeling that Pettersson and Graves could play as what you would call a traditional shutdown role together and be slightly more mobile than both of those guys. If you wanted to go absolutely crazy and throw Letang and Carlson together because you needed to go up tempo, Sullivan doesn't seem like the kind of coach that would do that, but that would provide the team with a lot more options in regards to chopping and changing who they are, which would be fun to watch, back to the point that you made earlier on. But this is all pie in the sky stuff because they still haven't actually managed to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very annoying.
I mean, I think at the end of games he would absolutely load up, I would hope, Mike Sullivan would, a little bit more Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson time with Gensel.
That was, yeah. I mean, you do say that and think to yourself, that's not a bad way to attempt to come back in a game or something like that, is it?
Or end a period, or come off of a penalty kill, or same stuff I've said for a long time, except now you add Erik Karlsson into it.
Yeah, for a decade, I think you've been on hard on that.
Yeah, I think he's a good coach, and I have no problem that he's still the coach. I just have my pet peeves, as I will no matter who's in that gig.
Yeah. We haven't actually got to the very, very back of the defense and spoken about how they feel. Yeah, that was the tone of voice I thought I'd get. Go for it.
I don't know. People are probably going to expect a little more criticism on it, but I'm going to be honest. Like, I was resigned to Jari coming back. I think the number's a little higher than I thought when you combine the term. Like, I thought the money would be at 3, maybe 4 years, not 5. But again, the term is kind of meaningless because team's going to suck by then anyway. So, like, Sid's going to be 40-something. The market sucked. It was a really bad year to be in this spot, and you needed to be proactive with the goaltending situation, and Ron Hextall fucking sucked. So there was nothing proactive being done. No maneuvering. He just ran it back with that pairing, and, you know, Dubé shows up, what, June? Free agent market sucked. God help me if they got John Gibson. He's been garbage for a while, and the only reason people bring him up is he's from Pittsburgh. If he was, you know, from Moose Jaw, no one'd care.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
The other options... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, when Hellebuck got mentioned, because obviously he wants out, I was like, I would be kind of okay with that, but the thing that terrifies me with any goalie getting paid the amount of, well, Jari and above, it's an expectation that they play 60-plus games, right? I don't think goalies should be playing more than 50.
Or at the very least, playing very good in the important ones.
But that's obviously Jari's problem. But the thing for me with, like, if you have a look at the teams that have done well recently, although you'd probably say Vasilevsky's the exception to the rule there, the teams that go deep into the playoffs, their goalies have only played 55 or below through the season. And you can call it load management or whatever, but obviously Fleury being my favourite player, his best seasons were when he played less than 55 games, either due to actual management or the fact that he got injured. And you sit there and go, it looks as though Vegas have worked that out, even though they didn't really get to choose to do that this season. They got forced upon them. But Ottinger for Dallas just fell apart, played too many games. You could see it. And that's what they have to work out with this 5.3 contract.
I don't have Shesterkin's numbers in front of me, but I felt like
he wasn't to the rule.
As sparkling, maybe, as he was the prior postseason.
Yeah, and this is the problem you've got. You want to load up on the guy because they give you the best chance to win. But don't worry about the regular season. You want to make it, not using Florida as the example here, right? You want to get in at a better spot than 8, but you want to get in with your most important position, not your important player, but your most important position ready to go, and at the most likely situation that they'll succeed at that point of the season. And with Jari being injured up and down and out and around all through the season last year.
Well, when he was healthy, another issue with Mike Sullivan is he leaned a little heavy into him back-to-backs. And, you know, with a goaltender that has had the lower body stuff that I think a hip, which is not the injury you want on a goaltender.
No.
You know, it's Tristan Jari's a really tough one because he has played really well, and he's done it for a couple extended stretches, so it's been done. Yeah. He had a really bad playoffs the 1 year when he was healthy. There's no, like, debating that. He sucked.
No. Yep.
And then he was hurt. And hurt is hurt, and they put him in game 7, and what was it, his foot?
Yeah, broken foot, I think.
He said he was, like, he really shouldn't have been playing, but Louis Domingue was just so bad. Like, they had to put in a crippled goaltender.
There shouldn't have been a game 7.
I know. I can't go back and rehash the Jacob Trouba hit. Man, the Jari thing, it just... you look at the free agent goalies, I'm not upset they didn't sign any of them. Like, Frederick Anderson did not make it to the market. Carolina's like, oh boy, this market stinks. Let's just sign our guys again.
Go back. Yep, makes sense too.
Hellebuck probably could have used the first round pick on that position, but he's 30, and he's a pending unrestricted free agent, and he's expecting to be paid, and that's kind of non-negotiable. Somebody will pay him. 8 years, $8 million, 30-year-old goalie.
It couldn't be Pittsburgh. I get that.
Now, the only other thing that it would take balls to do, because Jari would see the market and be able to sign with somebody else, and there's not much you can do about it. But Boston's situation, if you had the patience to wait them out, can you force their hand with Jeremy Swayman with an, dare I say, an offer sheet?
Jeez, I hadn't thought about that. Do they actually have the picks available to do that in the range?
They do for next year, I'm pretty sure. This year they did not. But once the draft happens, it's on to the next. So.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe you trade for Ullmark, which is weird that a Vezina... Like, what if the Penguins got the reigning Norris and Vezina winner? That would be funny.
And then they miss the playoffs again.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I thought Boston had an interest. They're in a tough spot. They've obviously had to shed players, and who knows what's going on like with Bergeron and Krejci. But they have had some good signings in the few days, very cheap. Some players, quote-unquote, coming home.
Oh, yeah, Lucic.
Not him. Why am I drawing up? Like Kevin Shattenkirk?
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Things like that. But they're a vulnerable team if somebody really wanted to mess with them.
They haven't signed Bergeron back yet, have they?
Well, he's supposedly, wanted to retire, but it has not done so officially. And the door, I thought he's still really good, so...
Yeah, you would be want, because you get there with Bergeron and they've still got 6.2 mil in cap space, so he's comeable backable.
They did just lose Bertuzzi and Hall.
Yeah, so they've got space.
Bertuzzi signing 1 year, $5 million something with the Leafs as we're recording this, so.
Interesting that different GM and Toronto have definitely gone for a different style of team straight away. Just as a side note.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be Pittsburgh and Toronto. It's going to be a comparison for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all right. They've got their truculence now. Toronto.
Yeah. They need depth scoring too.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to the original point, you know, Dubas finding an Andre Kaše before he got concussions again. He found Michael Bunting. I was expecting something like that.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Because I need offensive players to move the needle. There needs to be help there with the depth scoring. So, I think I've said enough there. Would we like to talk about something good?
Yes.
The Riley Smith trade was very good. It was very proactive, knowing the potential to lose Zucker, and the fact that they got ahead of that and got his replacement before free agency, I thought was very smart. Now, free agency didn't play out, you know, the way I would have liked to have seen. But that move, very smart. Third round pick they got for Teddy Bluger. So basically you traded Teddy Bluger for Riley Smith. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Riley Smith, one of the original Golden Knights, part of, Dale Talon's wonderful trade there. Still waiting on the hear word if Dale Talon did in fact get a cup ring from the Golden Knights.
Smart ass.
But Riley Smith has been a decent second line player for years, and that's a really nice pickup, and he's a good penalty killer too, and I think offensively one of the more offensively shorthanded players in the league, which is okay. Something that we haven't quite seen from a Penguins team in quite a while, because they don't really believe in playing skilled guys there. But really one of Smith's strengths is killing penalties. That's a bonus. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a true fan of the podcast, so you already know what I feel about penalty killing. It shouldn't be a focal point of acquiring a player, but if they're really good at it, nice bonus to be had there. He's a rush player, so any turnovers, it go the other way, making, you know, the Penguins aren't going to be that 2015-16 team that overwhelms a team with lots of zone time. Well, they had transition too, but you know what I mean. Like, they're slower. Yeah. They're going to have to counterpunch more often, and I think Riley Smith is a really nice player to provide that counterpunch. I assume with Malkin, but we'll see.
You know, it's interesting. Just, I keep staring at the roster in front of me as we have the conversation. You kind of have to hope that Brian Rust actually regresses back to his norm.
Yeah, that was part of making that deal, was expecting the first two or three years to be decent.
Yeah.
And he's got...
Otherwise, that one's going to hurt.
He's got trade protection, too.
Yeah, he's got a lot of control.
I think a little bit of Brian Rust's year was luck-related. And I think he'll be decent. I can understand why people don't love that contract, but that's the bet. The second you sign Rust, sign Raquel, sign Letang, sign Malkin, like you've already made your bet. You're going all in. Some of these might not pan out, and it's going to kind of stink if it doesn't, because you don't get those two or three years where you thought it would be decent. But those are bets I can live with. That is going for it.
Yeah, correct. No, it's not a matter of it's a bad deal. It's more a matter of, for this incarnation of the team right now, he needs to regress back to the mean, like to the Brian Rust that you're expecting. A goal every four games is not enough out of Rust. You need him closer to 30 than 20. It's just how it's going to be, particularly if he's playing with the players he's playing with. Admittedly, there's no one else down the
20,
roster that's going to fill
20 might
him.
Work. If he's not on the power play anymore.
Oh, I suppose they do have more options to not have him on there.
Yeah, Raquel kind of... rightfully so, I thought Raquel earned that spot. I really like Raquel, and I like that he's part of this team still. One of the few positives from Ron Hextall. That was a nice trade. Blind squirrels and all.
Yes, it's a very good point.
So I'm looking kind of like at the roster, and like you, it's pretty clearly Casey DeSmith's going to be finding elsewhere, because they have a new backup.
I was going to ask you earlier when we looked around to Jerry, Nedeljkovic I feel like it's just a DeSmith signing. He's younger, and it's like, well, we know DeSmith didn't work here. Let's just grab Nedeljkovic and pray that he's league average.
$300K cheaper.
Yeah. So
now he only played 15 games last year, and I haven't had time to dive in. Maybe he was hurt, but it would be a weird if he was not hurt and he only got 15 games, like knowing it's Tristan Jarry, knowing you need, as you said, the load management, like that's, you know.
Yeah. if you could get 35, if you get 35 out of your backup at league average, and making sure that your load manager starter who has legit injury concerns, you feel pretty happy with that.
Now,
I don't know.
Looking at his goalie card from Jay Fresh, his low danger save percentage was in the 8th percentile. And low danger save percentage sometimes can be volatile, not skill related. And his high danger was fine. I forget the number, but it was in blue. It wasn't red. So if the low danger regresses to a normal value, you're cooking.
You're cooking at league average.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so, but the samples aren't huge there. 15 games last year is all he played, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you get there and go, you know what? It's not a 27, a one-year deal. It's not a huge risk in a normal sense, right? But it's a massive risk because of everything we just said about Jarry and his health and his inability to get through, you know, 55-plus games and not be a mess come playoff time.
He did play 59 the year before, but he only had a 901 save percentage. So even he got to find that magic number on, because Casey DeSmith would string together some nice stretches of play, but when he was the guy, it fell apart pretty quick.
Yeah, and that's the difference between an NHL starter and an NHL backup, is the ability to rinse and repeat, you know, 5 games in a row, then take a game off and go again. I'd prefer it to be, you know, 4 and then a game off, but that's just, yeah, it's I remember you saying, I don't know, was it a couple of years ago now, seeing as we've sort of had, you know, like you said, 11 and a half months off, that doing a podcast with this Penguins team, I think it might have been going through the two cup runs, it's really hard to come up with stuff to talk about with a team that's in the middle of a run, because the roster's kind of settled. You're really nitpicking, if that makes sense, when you're talking about things to discuss, unless somebody's doing something awesome and stuff like that. And you tend to drift away from your team doing a podcast, and you talk more about the league because there's more stuff going on. This roster is not going to be the roster when they get to the trade deadline. This is not going to be the roster at the trade deadline. It will be different.
No, Dubas coming in and like knowing that there would be changes was a little bit reinvigorating covering the team. I've been like incredibly bored.
Yep.
Bored out of my mind, knowing that it doesn't matter what you write or what logic is, nothing good was going to happen. They were going to be top heavy, their depth was going to suck, and nobody was going to do anything about it.
Yep.
That's why I was excited with Kyle Dubas coming in, and why I was kind of disappointed with yesterday. Maybe it's my fault. I had higher expectations. I put expectations on what yesterday could have looked like. And it's tough to know with free agents. You don't know what their reasons are for choosing what they do. Some of it could be tax-free Florida or Texas, for example. Two guys that went for $3 million in the last 2 days. Both names I brought up. Evan Rodriguez signed a 4-year deal in Florida. I would have given that to him.
Yeah, but he gets all 4. Exactly to your point.
The other guy, Matt Duchene, and it's tough to know like what Duchene wanted. But when you look at the $3 million for 1 year, it's like, damn, really? Got Achari and Eller.
Well, yeah.
I know that you can play that game every year, but it's just the Pacioretty's, Duchene. I think Evan Rodriguez is a really strong middle six winger. And I know people got frustrated he got cold with the goals, but his offensive and defensive underlying numbers and metrics are really good, and he can skate, and his age fits the timeline. Yeah.
Well, he's in Florida now, just in my head thinking about it. Pittsburgh were never going to give him the length that he wanted. He wanted some term.
They gave Ryan Graves 6 fucking years.
Yeah, I know.
You know? And he's... Ryan Graves' career high in points, I think, is 26. And I wrote today, yeah. Brian Dumoulin had 25 last year, so...
Yeah. He's not there to score.
Though. No, I know, but you know how I feel about that.
Yep. No, I absolutely understand what you're saying. I just feel like on a team like this, he's just going to get points for giving the puck to somebody else and off they go.
Well, yeah, think Dumoulin would have that happen more often.
No, but that's what happened to Dumoulin. He couldn't do that anymore. He couldn't get the puck out of the zone.
He never could. His numbers. Last year was a career high for him, I think, at 26 points.
I know.
Or 25.
But when Dumoulin didn't have body parts that were falling off, he could at least get the puck scattered out himself. He didn't
rely on
his partner.
I've been hard on Dumoulin the last couple of years, and I thought one of Dubas' nice choices was letting him go. But when Dumoulin was a very good in his 20s player, he did a really nice job for the team.
Yeah. And that is what you just said then, is what they're expecting out of Graves.
Yep, and that's why, like, at first I'm like, really, we're going to lock in $4.5 million for 6 years on kind of a non-offensive guy? But when you look at cap hit percentage at the time of signing the contract, I'm sure very comparable, if not more favorable, yeah, for a Graves contract moving forward with I don't know how much the cap's going to rise next year, 3, 4, 5 million. It's not going to be like 10, but there's going to be movement. That's why Zucker took a 1-year deal. That's why a lot of these guys are trying to go short term with it.
Yeah, correct. All makes
and maybe sense. Some of the RFAs are trying to time out their bridge deals so that there's more money when they get their next one. So
yeah, it's this year and next year. I feel like next year will be similar to this year, the year after that, because of all those bridge terms that you're just talking about. Those 2-year deals, more so than the 1-year deals, they're the ones where players are going to get there and it'll be much larger, and they're going to hope that there's a lot of teams that have a lot of roster spots empty because everybody's done the same thing.
Definitely more than this year. This year was a very unique buyer's market.
It certainly was.
Past tense, though, for some.
True. Anything else roster-wise that you'd like to discuss?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, I was silly enough to pop out hey, we're actually going to record. Anybody got some questions? And Mr. Wolf, you can get stuffed with your what do you think the lines are going to be like on the current roster, because that's too hard at this point. So you can go and get nicked.
I'll give you a quick one.
Okay.
You know, the first line, Rust and Guentzel with Sid. Flip Raquel and Rust however you want. I think Riley Smith will be with Malkin.
That feels right.
Lars Eller will be your third line center, and as of right now, Michael Granlund on the right or left side there. And the other guy on that line.
Do you want Achari or Nieto? Which one of those?
Achari would probably be that guy. And then you got Nieto and O'Connor and Jeff Carter's corpse. I don't know.
And the anchor. Yeah.
I assume they'll put Graves with Letang just because I think everybody just assumes it's the Dumoulin surrogate.
I think they'll stick with Pettersson, to be honest, and I think Graves will play with Petrie.
That's the top four, though.
Yeah.
Joseph and Ruda.
Yep.
Although I think Joseph might, depending on what happens with these trades, I think Joseph might be on his way.
I kind of feel for him. Do you know what I mean?
He's just a guy. People put expectation like on prospects because he was one of the few they had, and they needed him to be good. He's not bad, but he's. I don't see a ceiling there really anymore.
It's funny, you know, like I look at certain players and there are sliding door moments where you go, geez, there's a lot of skill here. This could go really, really well. And then something happens where they either get blocked by the roster or the coach doesn't play them enough at a particular time in their career. And they cap out, like you said. The ceiling's gotten lower or whatever. I just feel like that happened to him, where it didn't get the chance where he needed to get the chance timing-wise, and he just capped out. And that's what happens. And it happens to some players.
I think part of this, though, too, is when he finally got a little bit of run, might have been a role a little too intense, even though I thought at times he did fine with it. I think over the long term, he started to show some cracks of being a top four defenseman, but putting P.O. Joseph in a bottom pairing role, he'll probably do really well, and he's still cost effective.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with the, as we said when the Ruta signing was done, what the hell's going on there? You've got a competent bottom pairing player in both P.O. Joseph and Chad Ruwet, right?
And depending on how you feel about Mark Friedman. At the time,
well, same scenario though. They were all options there that were cheap as chips that could play you those 10 to 11 minutes that you need so that you can just give your top four guys a rest. And yeah, it was just rehashing old conversations. But
you know what? Somebody who we haven't brought up and I think gets kind of forgotten about, Ty Smith. He will probably get a better look this year.
That's a really good point, actually.
But I didn't give him a thought until I just, like, scrolled down. I was looking to see if Mark Friedman was even a Penguin.
On the roster still?
And he is at 775K. Clearly, they can always bump him down. But, you know, a little bit below his name, Ty Smith. And
he's an RFA. Like, they're over the cap at the moment. How long can you be over the cap before you sign someone? And I know that he might have a two-way deal, so his cap won't hit on the cap, but how long can you be over before you have to fix it?
The 10%? Yeah. Opening night, I believe.
All right, so they've got time and space. Because I couldn't remember.
Well, Cam, they're getting rid of Petrie, Granlin, and Carter and getting Carlson at half retention, so... Come on.
There you go. That's how the trade's done. Easy as. And half of that salary total will end up in Arizona.
Allegedly.
There's no other salary cap dump team floating around at the moment, is there? I mean, you would have said Chicago's kind of like that, but they really kind of tried to fill out their roster around Bedard as they should.
San Jose.
They're not going to take it all. There's a third team involved here, Ryan. Come on.
I know, but they could take some.
True. No, that's true. And that's the only way the thing's sort of going to kind of work.
Well, they don't have that much space. But
the Ducks have got 28 mil.
Do they really?
Yep, they do right now. I have a feeling they're below the limit. By looking at the way this reads, almost 7 mil. So if you're going to find a third team...
Any big ticket items they got to take care of?
Gibson, like you said.
No, he's signed for...
Oh, sorry, you mean who have they got to re-sign?
Troy Terry will take probably most of that. So, they got Troy Terry and Zegras.
And Zegras.
That might come about 14-ish. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, that at least gets them above the floor.
Of course, they did just give Alex Killorn $6.25 million for the next 4 years. Alex Killorn, I always thought he was going to be the guy on Tampa that got the axe for cap reasons, but he kept chugging along.
He got paid this contract for 4 years pays him as much as everything else he's earned prior to this contract.
Yeah.
So it shows you how cheap he was all the way through the...
He was four-ish, I think.
Yeah. So he's got himself paid. Yeah, there is space in Anaheim trying to come up with somebody to bail them out.
I think the Penguins and Ducks, if I read a Bob Grove tweet correctly the other day, Penguins and Ducks are the most common trade partner for Pittsburgh in whatever sample size he had there. Or they were up,
really?
They were up there. Well, what do you think about,
think of...
like, Brock McGinn?
Okay, that's where
Simone Dupre.
Because I just think of
Chris,
like,
Kunitz.
Literally, yeah, that's the one I think of. That the Kunitz for Whitney trade.
But there's been a lot of those like smaller ones. Ricard Raquel. Like,
valid point. Jeez, Bob Grove does it again.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. Did
yes.
Anybody else have questions in the short term? I didn't even post them on Broken Ass Twitter.
Yeah, well, that was half my problem. I think we've kind of answered them, even if I haven't answered them directly. I just wanted to call out Wolfie because that was a very unfair question, first podcast back. But you did a good job, Rhino.
Thanks.
C. Flattery 45. We've already told you how it's realistically going to happen for the Carlson trade. So it's definitely going to happen.
I mean, that first is going to get involved. The third team's going to have to eat something. You might lose a Pickering. You have to, if you're going to make a trade like an Erik Karlsson, you have to be willing to put your chips in the middle of the table. It's going to hurt a little bit, and you're going to be like, oh, is this too much? That's probably where the right trade is when you're asking, is this worth it? To get proper value on the other side, because the Sharks couldn't have anything more perfect happen with that than him winning a Norris.
Yeah, correct. And then them, but I mean, you think about everything you've just said that they have to throw in.
Oh, I don't know if they have to, like, add. I mean, I assume the first round pick's gone. If that's, you have to buy these people off.
Yeah, you know, that's
to
exactly
clear
the
salary.
Point I was gonna make.
It's not just. Yeah. Carlson.
It's not just the player.
Take our Correct. Shitty players with shitty cap hits that cost assets.
Yeah. Look, this is not NHL.
Unless you're the Blackhawks.
24 or whatever. Well, yeah. True.
But I do think there's a path still. I thought Carolina was out when they signed Orlov at 7.75 and Michael Bunting at 4.5. But my hypothesis now is they get Carlson and then Burns takes a trade back to San Jose. Would be
Jeez,
how they make that money.
Listen to you think it out.
That would be my guess on how that would go. But hopefully it's not the case. And the next time we do this, which should not take 11 and a half months...
Hopefully
Erik Karlsson will be a Pittsburgh Penguin. We'll see.
It will be.
I mean, that's my pie in the sky, like, hope. But and he's got a number in the 60s, right? 65, it's available.
True, he can get his number because that's the most important part of the trade for Karlsson.
So but it was nice to have this outlet to talk Penguins hockey again. I know a lot of people disappointed that it's not quite as regular as it used to be. We're going to try a little better. I'm going to try a little better. It was not Cam's fault. It was mine. And we might have some different recording windows that will be more conducive to help with that, so that should work out well. So
fingers crossed.
But I guess that'll do it for the July 2nd, 2023 episode. The off season's not over. The Penguins are over the cap. Kyle Dubas, this is your chance to show us all those clever things that a lot of Penguins fans were looking to see when you were hired. So we'll see how that all plays out. But just want to say thank you to everybody for tuning into this after such a large gap and just having this still on your podcast feed, I guess. We'll be tweeting this out. But honestly, thank you as always. We're both very grateful that anybody downloads and gives us an hour and change of your time. So much appreciated.
Yeah. Don't know if they're actually going to find it on Twitter. We can just cross our fingers that that's the case.
I'll be doing my best. It'll be in the next blog for sure.
Yes, that's a good point, actually. You actually have a platform. I got rid of mine.
So, all right. See you next time, whenever that may be.
See you guys.